Welcome to Your Money Today, a unique look at financial, geopolitical, and other news relevant to you. For 45 years now, your host, Chris Temple, has provided his one-of-a-kind insights and advice on the markets and on our world. Whatever the subject, he calls them like he sees them. Roll up your sleeves with Chris as we get into today's program.
Welcome in again to a new episode of Your Money Today. I'm your host, Chris Temple, of course, and we haven't done a new episode of our own podcast in a while because I've been on so many different ones that I've sent along, but we're doing our own this week. And first off, in just a moment, I'm going to be joined by Brad Lammensdorf. He is the co-portfolio manager with John DelVecchio of what's called the AdvisorShares Ranger Equity Bear ETF. It's an exchange-traded fund that is actively managed, not leveraged, as some of the inverse products are that I do advocate trading into and out of from time to time. And they've done very, very well. As you'll hear in a few minutes, they've had a good start to 2025, which stands to reason if you're a bearish-oriented fund through yesterday, April the 24th, Thursday, round the numbers off, whereas the S&P 500, after this recent rally off the bottom, is down about 7% for 2025. HDGE, which as you saw is a symbol for Brad's fund, is up about 15% on the year. And they did that without leverage. They did it by their astute and active management, which you're going to learn more about the nuts and bolts of in just a minute. Now, similarly to when I interview individual company CEOs and need to share with you the typical disclaimers and whatnot. Of course, where a mutual fund and its performance are concerned, or an ETF for that matter, same thing, but a distinction without a difference, you might say. Always remember that past performance is no guarantee of future results. We look to a fund like this, I specifically do, to provide ballast for what I think is going to be a bear market that we'll continue to go into. We're going to ratchet downward in the stock market, but with a lot of volatilities, as we have seen in the recent past. I think that will still be true, of course, where HDGE is concerned, though they seek to smooth out the ups and downs and deliver us a better performance on the upside, even as the stock market overall goes down. And so I'm going to ask Brad about his big picture view of things. He and I compare notes on a fairly regular basis. He's on my email list. I'm on his. I get a lot out of following him. And what I like about his approach is that he's not a religious short seller or religious bear. Among other things, you're going to hear from him as to how from time to time he won't have the entire portfolio short. He'll go to cash, sometimes very heavily. I've seen him since I've known him 80 to 90% in cash, which is why from time to time, those of you who have been invested in or have followed hedge, as I have, will see that even when you have big rips up for the market, that doesn't always mean that HDGE goes down a lot if he's got himself out of harm's way. So I won't say anything more on his behalf, but instead I want to bring Brad on. And again, we're going to talk about the big picture as he and I both see it, and then get into the nuts and bolts of his management of the portfolio. And I'm joined by Brad Lammensdorf, who is the co-manager of the AdvisorShares Ranger Equity Bear Fund. Brad, first of all, congratulations on what's been a great 2025 for you guys so far.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. It's a crazy environment.
Well, it's been lonely being bearish for a while. And the old saying is that the markets can stay irrational longer than short sellers can stay solvent. But you've done a great job being an active manager, which we're going to get into in a few minutes. You've actually, using round numbers through Thursday's close, yesterday, we're posting this Friday evening, HDGE is up about 15% or so year to date, while the S&P through yesterday was down 7%. So you've doubled in the right direction the decline in the S&P 500, and we're going to get into your active management and the reasons for that. But before we do, and then take a look going forward at what your strategies might be, I want to look at the big picture first, because coming into 2025, we pretty much had a situation where, compared to other stock markets in the world, compared to historical measures of, PE ratios and yields and so forth, it was kind of a no-brainer that stocks had probably gone up about as much as they could, because we were stretched everywhere across the board. I know that's how you saw it, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, I would agree with that. If you on any metric you were looking at, we were up at 2,000, price ranges for the indexes, dividend yields, price to sales, price to book, market capitalization versus GDP, which is why Buffett is so heavily in cash. So all the big long-term gauges, were at a very, very big extreme, and they're still not mid-range yet. So
Well,
I
no,
think
not
they've
only are
gotten.
they still not mid-range, but I think that you and I were talking before we started recording, and to me, the way I've characterized it, and I'd like to hear your take on this, is that we still don't have a market where a lot of people are saying, okay, if we get a bear market or a typical even correction, we still need to go down a couple of steps, maybe to a 16 to 18 price earnings ratio, let alone lower than that if it's a bear market. But I think that the average economist still doesn't get the fact that sticky inflation and sticky interest rates are here to stay. We're not going back to 1 or 2% on the federal funds rate, let alone on long-term paper, are we, Brad?
No, we're not. And I'm going to say one thing, and then I'm going to just dive into something else, both on the long end of the curve. But, 8, 10 years ago, that all the countries around the world were just printing money and issuing debt, and it was 1%, 0.5%, negative percent for a while. So all this debt was created, and now all of it is coming due and having to be repriced to the market again. And so you've got a tremendous amount of supply coming into the market on the long end. And if you look at interest rates from Japan to, a lot of the different countries internationally, you really are seeing their long end starting to kick out. And I think it's a trend. I don't see any reason why our, interest rate would avoid that. And as we talked about before the show, the 2003 low for me is kind of a trigger on the TLTs, which represent the 20-year bond market. And I think we take a big leg down. And I don't know if it's 1% or 2% higher. We had a great bull market during the 90s under a higher rate, but clearly we're going to have some adjustments. And that's basically what you and I are kind of talking about now, which is, we need a market back down to 14 times and we're still at 18.
Right. And again, it doesn't mean that the world has ended or is ending. It means that things need to be reasonably priced based on higher costs that are going to be chronic, higher debt that's going to be chronic, and the servicing costs of that debt. We've got a president who
Yeah.
one minute is make America great again, while it's make debt great again. There's no sign that I've seen that either the president or the Republicans on Capitol Hill have a serious bone in their body when it comes to reducing the size of government. Still, where am I all
Well,
wet?
I'll tell you something even a little scarier. So when you look at trying to reduce the debt, what you're going to find is, one of the hedge fund managers I was watching last year had a great Druckenmiller had a great analysis of this. But basically, 75-80% of our debt problem is Medicare, Social Security, these type of liabilities and commitments that we've made, and those are not really negotiable. So this train is going to be really hard to slow down as it gets bigger and bigger over the next several years, I think.
Well, it is, and then it becomes, and I know you understand this as well as anybody, that it becomes a supply issue. And I've used that term supply many times. Doesn't mean that the U.S.'s credit rating is going in the toilet or we're going to default on our debt, what it means, the marketplace, the bond market vigilantes, which have been resurrected in the recent past. They say, hey, we just need a higher coupon. I remember vividly in 1987 when the stock market imploded. It didn't mean we were going to see a crashing economy, and in the end, we didn't. But it was a market event caused by a huge move up in yields at that time.
And there's tremendous margin on the New York Stock Exchange right now,
Good point.
tremendous. So when these moves down come, they're gonna get exaggerated because there's that much margin in the market, and there's gonna be margin calls. There's gonna be forced selling, and when that forced selling, and that's why you see when you like the other day when we got very bullish toward the lows. We're not magicians. We've got indicators that the bullish percent, for instance, is one of my favorite. It's a point and figure methodology that basically looks at every stock on the NYSE, and it basically says how many percent of stocks are in a positive chart pattern, basically a point and figure buy signal. And when you get to 75, that's actually bad because everything's up. So when all the there are no point and figure buy signals and the numbers get down to like 18 or 22 or somewhere in that neighborhood, it gets very bullish because everything's been washed out. So it's kind of the trader side of the business versus, the macro headwinds that the market probably will have. And we're not gonna, it's probably not gonna happen all at once. Big bear markets tend to occur in real volatile, huge swinging, very scary type environments. It's not the smooth 10 years we've had. So I would definitely say at a minimum, we're going to have, a lot of volatility and a lot of concentration of people getting real bullish and real bearish, which is for a trader is actually really good for people to take advantage of it if they're contrarians.
Well,
So,
absolutely.
So by
Absolutely.
summer, if everybody's like, oh, everything's great and the bull and every all the sentiment gauges are all great again, I mean, you're like, okay, how much hedge can I buy? You know what I'm saying?
A guy like you is going to be salivating, and people that are looking to buy hedge are going to be salivating for sure, myself included. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of your management, I want to ask one more question as far as a macro situation. You and I agree that coming into the year, the market was just out over its skis. It needed to be repriced. We need more legitimate valuations, closer to earth, not up in the stratosphere. How much of the recent correction, which you obviously did very well on, how much of that was really due to all of the tariff and trade war angst and whatnot? Because that's all you heard about in the press. And I ask that because it suggests to me, if that's what most of the people were looking at that were trading, it suggests that people still just don't get the underlying macro story, and that's a shoe that's still going to drop, even if this trade stuff gets settled, isn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. The market's mispriced. It's very overowned. I don't know where we are after this correction, but coming into this correction, Bank of America has a lot of great. I get a subscription called the Daily Shot. It's a real interesting. It has all sorts of different charts on it. So coming into this, it was the most invested that equity was as a percent of an average portfolio in the United States, hands down, higher than it was in 2000. So, it had drifted way, way, way up. And there's a lot of people that are in the markets that never have experienced that kind of volatility. It'll be interesting to see if that changed, if it frightened some people and that exposure. But that overownership needs to get washed down some before we're probably at a final bottom.
Well, and that's a
People,
great point.
stocks aren't popular at the lows. People
No.
aren't, they're not aggressively buying. But I do think we probably hit a trading low, but there'll probably be trouble down the road.
Well, and you make a great point that a lot of people, and the reason why I think we're going to see more of a comeuppance down the road, Brad, is because so many people today really have never lived through a full-fledged cyclical bear market, let alone a secular one. You have this brief self-inflicted one back in 2020, over COVID, and then we bounced right back. And then 2022, we had a down year, bounced right back. I don't think people are prepared for what I think is going to be much more of a slow, dull ache. But I want to move on to more of your management style because, folks, what I like about Brad's fund, and I mentioned David Tice before he came on, as an active manager once upon a time of the Prudent Bear Fund. I have used the garden variety passive ETFs, inverse ETFs like the SPXU, like SQQQ, and so forth. And it's like nitroglycerin. If you don't know what you're doing, don't use it because you've got to get into these things and right back out. They're good for trades. You can do really well if your timing is good, but over time they eat up capital because of the way that these things are structured. And HDGE, contrary to that, is an actively managed fund where you don't use leverage and that type of thing and all of these different strategies. You actually are picking your spot stock by stock of things that you want to short, number one. And number two, if you think that the market might bounce, and you just alluded to this a couple of minutes ago, you'll swing to cash somewhat so that you're not, falling on your sword if everybody is going to be buying again for a while. And that's great. And there's not a whole lot of that in the marketplace these days. So you do look at sentiment, you look at the broad markets. But tell us a little bit, maybe use a couple examples of your portfolio holdings if you want, Brad, about what you do look to short. What are the ideas you have right now of things that are still overpriced?
So one of the more interesting shorts, and it's been a frustrating short, but we hope that the air comes out of the tire, is CACC. It's Credit Acceptance Corp. And they do auto finance, and we've been short the whole sector. We really think that in 08, the government came in and cleaned things up so fast that ABS debt, which is the debt of auto finance type companies, never really broke. That meaning, the default rates really never jumped. We think we're in a much different environment, and we think that these companies really have extended a lot, and that there are going to be some losses coming and that are going to have to be written off. And CACC, so for instance, there's Ally that I think was part of General Motors a long time ago, and they've spun off ALLY. They trade at 1x price to sales. Most of these companies in the space trade at 1x price to sales. This stock actually trades at 3x price to sales for no specific reason except that it's a cold stock, and it just is a very expensive for what they do. So we don't like the area. We think that there's a lot of bad stuff coming in the area in general. But we also think this stock is, completely mispriced. So, that would be one example. There was another company we were short last year. We're not short it now, but it's a great example of what we do. Is there was a stock called ELF, ELF, and it was a super hot stock, and everybody was running into this thing. And they have, cosmetic. They're in the cosmetic business, and it got up to almost 10 or 11 times price to sales, which is like crazy for this kind of business. And of course, they stuffed the channel. They were growing like crazy. They were selling their products everywhere they could, and they basically diluted themselves. And of course, their growth rate slowed down because they couldn't distribute anywhere else. Like, it's kind of like Crocs way back when you start seeing
Right.
them in a gas station, it's time to sell the stock.
Exactly.
And so ran out of a lot of distribution that was creating their growth, and the stock fell from 180 to, I think it's like down at 60 now, but I think we shorted it twice. But that's a classic example of really what we're looking for, how companies are manipulating their balance sheet, pulling forward sales, rigging their earnings somehow. And then, and over the last 5 years, we've actually really we get bigger in higher price to sales stocks now than we ever used to, because we actually have found that the way a stock goes down a lot is because it's trading at 10 or 20 times price to sales, and it drops to 4 times price to sales. And that's how a stock can go down a ton. And so we really pay a lot more attention now to those than almost any of the other ideas.
Now, I want to get back to your theme behind CACC, credit acceptance, because I think you're describing the same dynamic as why junk bonds, for people who follow the bond markets for corporates, still have not had a big blowout in yields, because this mentality crept in there too, in the wake of 2008 and the Ben Bernanke introducing quantitative easing to the world, that, well, we're just going to paper over all of these losses. We're just going to extend and pretend. And now, to hear you say it, and I completely agree, we're going into an environment where whose saying was it that when the water goes down, you see who's wearing swimming trunks and who's not?
But see, the thing I love about CACC isn't just that they could have some credit issues and things
Okay.
like that, or have to write off some debt. The thing I love about it is if it were trading where Ally was trading, it'd have to drop 66%. And
Okay.
that's that. So for them to disappoint just a little, I should get a big bang to the downside on it because
So
it's so
aside from the
priced.
broader credit issues, they're just too stupidly priced compared to even their peers who have the
Right. So if
same
I just
credit
get a
issues.
little bad news, I get a big push in the stock. That's why
Gotcha.
I love it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
How are you investing, if at all, right now? And I saw recently that you had stock like UPS, and there was a packaging company on there. I think you probably would agree with me that the consumer economy is going to take a little bit of a hit, that consumers are going to get squeezed a bit more, maybe not be as profligate, and that's going to claim some victims that I think you're looking at,
You know,
right?
it's really funny. So the way that we really start our process every month is my partner has quantified his forensic accounting approach,
Okay.
and he fits. And we have about a 15 S&P 1500 is the universe that we traditionally use. We don't short anything below $1 billion in market cap, and we shy away from stocks that are highly shorted. But we look through his lists, and it usually delivers us the worst 10 to 15% of that entire universe. So we're working with statistically the worst names, you know, from our, you know, secret sauce that, and then we get dive into them and start looking at them more. So, you know, of course, you know, some are model-oriented shorts, a couple of that you just mentioned. It just so happens that they're in there, but that's why they're in there.
Okay.
And then there's other where we look at them and we're like, no, that's a 3% position instead of say 1 or 1.5. So when we get a high conviction, that's why those you'll see a 3 or 4% position in something.
In a particular name, as opposed to maybe 1%.
Yeah, 1, 1.5%.
Right.
That's usually what we're pricing them at, but our best ideas usually are about 3%, 4%, depending on, you know, what's going on.
Okay.
And
Now
we can
going,
go as high as 7, but we
right.
don't.
Wow. In a specific name.
Yeah, but we don't really go there, but we do have the flexibility to.
Okay. If something was really glaring.
Yeah, something was crazy, like we just so obvious.
Yeah.
One of the things that I also like to do too, just from a trader's point of view, you know, it's the price action of a stock can tell you a lot about what's going to happen in the future. And when I mean that, for instance, you know, Netflix is already hitting 52-week highs even through this correction, whereas other stocks aren't. So relative strength is really, really important when you're looking through names. So from experience, I know not to short really high, you know, high relative strength names that are acting extremely good even during a correction, because that's a warning sign that the institutions are still accumulating the stock and you're going to get run over.
Good point.
And so we're very thoughtful on the price action of a lot of the names that we're in too.
Well, you need to
So
be.
So we're looking for that negative price action. We're looking for stocks that are bouncing on light volume, and so that we can see that the institutional sponsorship really isn't following the price up. So, that from a trader's point, from an execution point, or an entry point into the security to short it, like right now, like there's some names that surprise me that they're getting a little more volume on the upside than I would have thought, and maybe handled the correction a little better. There's others that got murdered and now have bounced, and they're bouncing on comically low volume. So the ones that aren't being sponsored are probably the ones that I'll get bigger in on the bounce on, as we go back in.
Gotcha, that makes sense. So basically, you're looking at your strategy as far as when to short. You're looking at the broad market, and you will short less, meaning have more in cash if you think that the market's going to perform well. Even though, like right now, as you alluded to, you're looking at stuff that's rallying and figuring out what you might add to your short
Right.
posture.
So at the lows, we were like almost 55% in cash.
Okay.
And so as the market bounces, so for every time you see our fund say down 1%, the way the math works in a short fund, we're actually gaining 2% in exposure.
Right.
So sometimes a bounce is adding exposure without me having to do anything. It's adding it back. Now, if I've fully taken off a position and I want that position back on because it's bounced 20 or 30%, then we start adding and we have the room to add. And we added some stuff today. It's been a monster run off the lows, and not every stock is going to continue to participate from here. There's going to be some stocks that miss their earnings that don't do well. I will say that I do think that this correction has forced a lot of money managers into some staple stocks that I think that are bear traps. And I've been noticing that a little. That's kind of interesting that, some of these companies, they're not doing as well. The Ozempic craze, whatever it may be.
Gotcha.
They're just not putting up the numbers anymore. So anyway, it'll be interesting. The next few months should be real interesting from a trader's point of view.
Oh, I'm
But
sure.
as you alluded to, things are still very overvalued, and be prepared for a lot of volatility.
And bottom line, for any further takeaway, Brad, for folks that are looking anew perhaps at your fund, what's your elevator pitch for them in closing?
So if you're looking to do some hedging, options can get very expensive. They're very expensive right now. You're going to burn through a lot of premium. You can use margin to buy our product, even though, so you're kind of setting up a hedge fund in your own account. Last year, the market was up 26%. We were only down 13, but when the market, so we didn't lose as much as the market went up. So if you shorted the S&P 500, you were down 26. If you had us, you were down 13. But during these market declines, which is way our fund is set up, we're really set up to make more money as the market goes down, as you saw recently. So we try to lose less money than the indexes by being tactical and managing our risk, raising cash, whatever it may be. And then on the downside, we really do put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make sure that we significantly outperform, because that's what people are really paying us for, is that downside protection.
Sure. And importantly, as we said at the outset, you did it without the built-in risks and capital destruction of those passive inverse
Yeah,
ETFs.
so the way inverse products work is if you have, let's say, an index of 100 and it's down 10% in a day, then you're at 90. Let's say you're up 10% the next day. Now you're at 99. So you do that 1,000 times, and you'll see how so these products compound on their daily performance. So they are not tracking the S&P 500 exactly. Sometimes they may do a little better, sometimes they may do worse, but they're certainly not approved at a lot of the big Morgan Stanleys and UBSs and Royal Bank of Canadas. We're literally one if not one of two products approved at all of those firms due to the way that our product is set up, because we're like a mutual fund. We short in an account and we have an NAV at the end of the day. So we're exactly like a mutual fund, except that we're actually more transparent. All of our positions are on our website every morning, and every active ETF has to do that, because the market makers that make markets and make the spreads in the ETF need that information to create the pricing intraday. So they take the, and they're called authorized participants. So these desk traders are setting up, creation and redemption units in our ETF all the time. We can handle a lot of liquidity in our ETF. We can handle $50 or $100 million in a day coming in and out. And these are the guys who kind of, help us facilitate that and then tell us, hey, you have money coming in. And then we just put more money to work, or maybe we leave it in cash and use it a few days down the road. But it's at our discretion, so that, as you said, from a tactical point of view, it makes it really nice.
Great stuff. Well, Brad, congratulations again on a good start to the year, besting the market as much as you've done. And I love your style and strategy, and it's why I've got HDGE as a core holding for our folks at the National Investor, one where you've taken take some short exposure against a broad market, but one that's done intelligently and with an active strategy, and not robotically, and you can get hurt more like we could with those inverse funds. So great job. Keep up the good work, and we'll catch up again down the road.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Appreciate being here.
Following up from Brad, a couple of things I'm going to be commenting on in the next regular issue of the National Investor that'll be out by Monday, maybe over the weekend still. First off, you'll hear him, or you did hear him, discuss TLT, the Barclays, that's kind of the flagship treasury ETF for people who want to be long a simple measure of the treasury market, meaning you believe that yields are going to go down and prices go up. He talked about the 2003 lows on the chart for that being a key point. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in the issue coming up and why that's significant. I don't think we're going to see, neither does he, when we were talking otherwise, besides on this video, that we're going to see that anytime real soon. We may see long-term yields soften a bit near term as the economy shows more signs of recession and as some of the fears over having U.S. paper dissipate, assuming that we get some more relaxation of all of the trade kerfuffle that's been going on. But longer term, as you already heard, again, he and I agree that supply issues, the rolling over of a lot of debt this year and next especially, are just going to keep relentless pressure upward on long-term yields. And it's going to cause a repricing of things. And I also hope in discussing that, folks, that you got a lot out of Brad's conversation. A lot of people are out there that have been perma bears for years. For years, they've been saying the sky is falling, and it's kind of a religion to them. Here's a guy who has done a great job in a very matter-of-fact, clinical way, without saying the sky is falling, without saying we're doomed or the apocalypse is coming or anything of that nature. It's just that, hey, we need to have a rational market again. We need to have a market repriced for the realities of the world, the realities of chronically higher living costs, chronically higher interest rates. It's not the end of the world if we go back to a 13 or 14 price earnings ratio on the S&P 500, but it does mean we're going to be down, depending on where you think we're going to fall in there. Ultimately, 3,500 to 4,000 on the S&P 500 in what is probably going to be an unfolding secular bear market. So be aware of that. And I would encourage you to take a look at HDGE if you haven't already. Of course, if you're already a member of the National Investor, you know all about this fund. And we're probably going to be bumping up our exposure to that fund as this stock market rally off the bottom, I think, is going to be getting long in the tooth. So that's all on that subject. One more thing I want to share specifically right now, and I put the link to this in the notes along with this episode. The email that's going to go out to our wide distribution audience over the weekend, so you might already see this. I'm going to have the link listed separately, but I'm going to be speaking at the New York section of the SME later in May. The subjects I'll be talking about include the nuclear energy renaissance and some things tied to that. I'll be chairing a panel of experts on that subject. But I was also asked to put together a video. I may do it live. They may replay the video at different parts of the program. I really don't know yet. But one of the things I've tried to get people to understand, and I will be, especially at this conference, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there about what's going on in America when it comes to mining and permitting and stuff like that. But I'm going to encourage you to watch this video that I'm giving you the link to, again, one fashion or another, whether you've seen it in my email, whether it's on the show notes here. It's only 11 minutes long. I was able to nail that 11-minute mark that they asked me for the program's purposes. But it basically makes the point, folks, that we need to have a brutal reality check over this premature claiming of victory that a lot of people have been engaging in the recent past, thanks to a couple of President Trump's executive orders. We're going to make energy great again. We're going to unleash America's energy dominance. We're going to start reshoring all of our different industries, and we're going to start mining nickel and copper and all those different things in America again. We're going to increase energy production, et cetera, et cetera. And sure, I'm all for those goals. I want to see them happen. But permitting reform alone is only a small beginning of what needs to be done. We don't have the labor to do these things. We don't have the money to do these things. And as I point out in this 11-minute video, President Trump's own executive order on this very subject admits that it will only go so far under its current contemplation as the appropriations process in Washington allows. Well, guess what? We're already on a course to have a deficit in this fiscal year that ends in September that is higher than it was the year before. There's going to be a lot of pressure in Congress to try and find ways to save money, not to spend more. The priorities, regrettably, are a $1 trillion military budget and more tax cuts or extending old tax cuts. I've already explained in recent days how the president and Republican leadership on Capitol Hill has already utterly thrown away for this fiscal year all of the savings that Elon Musk and Doge have identified. So now we're reduced, as even Musk himself admitted recently, to saying, well, maybe for fiscal year 2026, we've identified $150 billion in savings. So look, we need something. And I've said this before in other discussions, referring back to a great floor speech in the House many years ago that Democrat Representative Marcy Kaptur from Ohio gave. But we need something that's serious, like the Marshall Plan at the end of World War II. We need something like the space program. But this is an urgent need that we have to properly fund and properly organize all of these different initiatives to reshore our critical minerals production and processing and energy and all of this stuff. Sound bites aren't going to do it. Executive orders that are going to take years just on permitting reform to accomplish are not going to do it. We need way, way, way more than that. And I hope people start to understand this because we're getting ourselves set up for some massive disappointment. So again, take a look at that video, get a hold of your member of Congress, get a hold of your senator, keep in touch with me, keep in touch with the folks at the Coalition for a National Infrastructure Bank. This is an incredibly important issue. And again, if we don't add these pieces to this, then all of the hopes, or most of the hopes, are going to be dashed to see these industries come back in any meaningful way in the US. And I don't want to see that happen, but I regret that that's where we're going without people willing to think and act outside the box, including the president himself. So that's all for today's episode. I'm glad you tuned in, and we'll be back with you before too many more days.
We're glad you joined us today. As always, write to Chris at nationalinvestor.com with your comments and questions. And be sure to visit yourmoneytoday.org if you haven't already. Sign up for our free alerts, notifications of new shows, and more. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.